This is certainly not a part of the Book of Church Order. Next, on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And as always, it's good to be here in the studio talking with you today by the miracle of Skype.
Yes, and it is a miracle that we are talking on Skype today.
The way it's operating lately, the way the internet's operating lately, everything's a miracle.
Yes, it is. Well, Jack, for those of you, ladies and gentlemen, who didn't understand the reference that I used to open the program, Chuck understands it, and I do, because the Book of Church Order are documents, and different denominations have their own standards and rules by which they follow their denominational distinctives. And many with the Baptist, it's Baptist Faith and Message. With the Nazarene Church, Chuck, what is the guidelines you guys use?
The manual.
The manual, where you used to be a former Nazarene. And with Presbyterians, such as Charles and myself, it's the Book of Church Order. I'm not sure, Charles, what exactly they call their book in the Episcopal Church USA, but I think what you could probably call the book now without too much hesitation is utterly confused. And I say that because just this week in Indianapolis, the Episcopal General Convention took place. And during that, that's where the bishops of the Episcopal Church, which is their ruling hierarchy, gathered together to make changes to or additions or create rules or modify rules by which the Episcopal Church operates. For those of you out there who are saying, well, you know, that's the problem with you all. You guys are not following the Bible. The Bible is the foundation of everything, especially my denomination and Chuck's denomination. The Bible is first and foremost. Our Book of Church Order is just how we operate our government in those biblical parameters. However, and the point is that you really have to make sure that as a church, you have the Bible first and foremost as the ultimate absolute source of non-argumentative truth about how you do things, and then work everything out, as we say, decently and in order from that in your governance of your churches. Well, the Episcopal Church, Charles, seems to have decided that their rules and regulations don't necessarily have to be guided by biblical truth, which is not necessarily a total shock, but what they've done now really pales in comparison to some of the things that we've seen in the past.
Oh, pales? This is a direct spit in God's face. This is nothing more or less than a spoiled child's taking a look at the rules and saying the rules no longer apply, and then trying to claim some kind of biblical backup for it. This is just an amazing flaunting of the law of God. It's one of the most, this is a term that a lot of people will not have heard, but this is a complete antinomian revolt. And antinomian means against the law. In other words, they're simply denying that the law is any longer in force. And by the law, we mean the moral law of God.
Well, absolutely. Well, what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, specifically, is that by a vote, the full convention, the Episcopal General Convention, approved what they call anti-discrimination language, Charles. And this is anti-discrimination language so that transgendered clergy candidates and church members can operate more freely in the body of the Episcopal Church USA. So the people who pushed for this said that they needed an explicit statement of acceptance as the church-wide policy, and they got it. And this was very interesting because this was also arm-in-arm, and I use that not tongue-in-cheek, and I apologize, but arm-in-arm with another vote that the House of Bishops of the Episcopal Church voted overwhelmingly by a vote of 111-41 to authorize a provisional right for same-sex unions. Now, basically, what they're writing up their form of their service there in order to okay a prayer service for blessing same-sex unions.
Look, can I stop you for a minute? We need to define terms. When they say right, it's not R-I-G-H-T, it's R-I-T-E.
That's correct. A rite of the church, yes.
A rite is a ceremony.
Yes, their ceremony, correct. Well, thank you. I think that was a helpful clarification. But so what we have right now is a body in America, the Episcopal Church, which is still calling itself a church, that has basically thrown off completely the biblical truth in order to as they say, be affirming and accepting. Sure, you and I said this online. I wonder how much longer it's going to be before God just basically opens up the doors and lets the fire and brimstone start raining down.
Well, Barry, I think we're already in a judgment phase. All you got to do is look at the leadership that we have. One of the first signs of judgment is, just remember that all this stuff begins in the church, and the church has been, frankly, a weak sister since the middle of the 19th century, if not before that. Actually, it started to fall apart probably in the middle of the 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
And we're beginning to see everything begins in the church, and the church having surrendered its cultural distinctive through the adoption of personal pietism rather than a sticking to the cultural mandate. This is the outgrowth of that, Barry. This is what you see at the end. In my church, we're trying to figure out how we're going to recruit new members. I mean, this is off topic. You know, how we're going to attract new people to the church. One of the reasons that men don't come into church is because there's nothing for them to do. They go home and pray and read your Bible and become personally pious, but don't do anything in society. And there's a little bit of schizophrenia, even in churches that don't necessarily hold to that particular viewpoint, and it's showing in the leadership of these churches. When you get a vote of 111-41, only three people abstaining to authorize a provisional right for same-sex unions in a church that claims to be a Christian church, you got trouble, and you have major trouble.
You've got deep trouble.
Well, this is why the Episcopal Church is currently at about 7% of its membership in 1960. Something like that. At one point, they were 33 million members, and last I heard, they were down to about 2 point something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, but Chuck, what we're seeing is a real trend here, because if our listeners will remember, it was this same Episcopal Church USA who, about 10 years ago, actually it was 9 years ago in 2003, consecrated an openly homosexual bishop by the name of Gene Robinson as their bishop. That was the first time a church body had done that, and so they kind of broke the ice, so to speak, and did this, and it created quite a stir. There were some of the more orthodox wings of the Episcopal Church who decided that that was unacceptable and split away from the Episcopal Church USA and began created a different Anglican Communion, because that's what the U.S. is part of, the Anglican Communion worldwide.
They joined up with an African Episcopal Church that essentially remains very conservative. And that's an interesting trend, if you think about it. Yeah, they went into fellowship with an African Episcopal Church and now recognize that particular body as who they are sanctioned with, rather than the Worldwide Episcopal Church, which is hooked up with the Anglican Church in England, which is itself is a, shall we say, the sick man of Europe, if it's even really still alive. I've been to England and been past Anglican churches, and I looked at the bulletin boards on the outside, Barry, and it was shocking, the things that were going on. Yoga classes, things about talking about how to unmarried couples, how to get along as an unmarried couple, living together, you know, those kinds of things. They were all over the place. So this church has major trouble. I think we need to define terms here again, and I'm finding something rather ironic. They talked about ordaining transgenders, and this was part of that 111-41 vote. There is no such thing as a transgender. Let's be clear about that. You are plumbed a certain way, and you are given a set of DNA, and that DNA on the 23rd pair is either an XY or a double X.
That's right.
And you cannot change that. That cannot be changed. It is permanent. God has given you that. Having the outer plumbing changed does not suddenly make you a male or a female. And this Reverend Carla Robinson, this quote is so ironic that I almost have to laugh if it wasn't so sad. I stand here as a priest today because my diocese specifically said that my gender identity and expression don't disqualify me from the discernment process. Robinson said from the floor of the convention, I ask that as a church we do the same for my trans brothers and sisters. Well, now, wait a minute. Trans brothers and sisters. Is your trans sister really your brother? And your trans brother really your sister?
Well, according to God's plan and our DNA, yes, exactly. Because It said that he made them male and female. It didn't say he made them male to be female and female to be male.
Right.
See, that is a perversion of God's creation order. If the, similarly, with the act of homosexuality, it is a perversion of God's creation order in sexuality and reproduction. So this is just the next step. But Chuck, I think what it really shows in great detail, and we can see this almost like it is a Petri dish, that the Episcopal Church is the Petri dish, that at first they openly accepted an open homosexual, an unrepentant homosexual, as an officer in their church. Then we move to, and this started back in 2009, creating a liturgy to bless the same-sex unions. And now we're coming to, well, you need to accept those people who have, well, honestly, it's a psychological disorder, Charles, who are not satisfied with being the gender that they were created at birth and want to use artificial means in order to try to mask or alter that gender so that they can take on the role or the guise of the opposite gender.
Barry, it's just a perversion. Now, you know, what they'll point to is there are, I'm speaking, putting my biochemist hat on here for a minute, and I did take some developmental classes, so I know a little bit about this, although it's been a long time ago. There are some genetic anomalies, double XY, XYYs, strange things, and they're rare. They're exceedingly rare. And they will point to that and say, see, these things happen, and we aren't all double X or XY. I go, well, yeah, that's true. We're not all that way. But do you think God and his sovereignty will be mocked on that? Yes. Are there genetic anomalies? God gives all kinds of different people all kinds of different burdens. That doesn't mean that we drop his law, because the law applies to everyone, whether they're genetically the same or not. It doesn't matter what your genetic makeup, the moral law still holds. And this is where the lie is, Barry. Somehow we've adopted a situational ethics. In looking at this, the Episcopal Church has adopted a situational ethics. And the whole idea is that somehow if you go a certain way and maintain that for the rest of your life and remain faithful, then it's okay. Well, God didn't say, you don't have to obey my law unless you're going to obey it faithfully for the rest of your life, you know, or not obey it faithfully for the rest of your life. He said, you will obey it, period. And he put sanctions, negative and positive, on the obedience or the disobedience of that law. And the fact is that this church is ignoring that. And I will say right up front, it's no longer a church. It's a gathering of individuals to practice some kind of aberrant spirituality. It has become a pagan church which worships sexuality and not the Jesus Christ of the Bible.
You're absolutely right in that, Charles. But they're not the only church that is moving forward in this particular line, because we've seen both the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and the mainline Presbyterian Church, the PCUSA, moved down this road as well. As a matter of fact, you were going to mention something about the recent happenings at the Presbyterian Church USA's annual assembly.
Well, basically, by a margin of 52%, the PCUSA blocked the proposal for the redefinition of marriage. In other words, they blocked recognizing same-sex marriage, which of course is an oxymoron. It's same-sex unions. There is no such thing as marriage. Marriage is defined by God as one man, one woman, and any attempt to redefine it is simply calling something else by that name. And the PCUSA, the Presbyterian Church in the United States of America, basically by 338 to 308, just rejected that at their General Assembly. And an elder in my church basically said, don't worry, it'll be back. He said, this is like a school levy. They just keep bringing it up and bringing it up and bringing it up and bringing it up until it passes, sort of the same way we got gambling in Ohio.
Yeah, exactly. You just keep chipping away and chipping away and chipping away until you get what you want.
Exactly.
That has been the MO of the hardcore left and the radical homosexual movement, well, since they began.
Exactly. You know what, Barry? We're out of time.
I figured we might be.
Yes, we are. So we need to wrap this up. All I can say, as I sit here sort of dumbfounded, is join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.